From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So we're dancing in the streets here. And we're pleased to welcome in Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It's easier to dance in the streets when it's not 105, I just have to say.
The one thing I found, like, sometimes I swim in the morning, and I don't have a pool, but, you know, so you go to swim, and usually I just leave my shoes in the car because it's just one more thing to carry in, you know. But now you get out of the pool. I don't know why they surround pools with concrete instead of grass.
It's so hot. That's true.
I remember when one of my kids was just, you know, just getting old enough to walk on their own, you know. And here we are all out on the front lawn, but the driveway's right there, you know. Mm-hmm. And a shade of a nice hackberry tree and a nice summer day. And she toddles over to the driveway. No!
Oh, no! Cook those little
her
feet.
Bare feet. Yeah. Oh. Oh, my goodness.
They'll only do it once, though. They do learn quick.
And the street is even worse because it's so dark.
Yes.
It just sucks.
We have to be careful with our dogs. It's the same thing. You can burn their feet.
Yeah.
You have to be really aware. Isn't it amazing how God designed us just listening to this? Even a baby will know. They will not do that the second time.
Yeah.
They learn very quickly. God, it's amazing. When you raise your own children, and part of the purpose of God's Heart and Hands Ministry is talking about family life and returning God to the center of the family, not the secular values and not all the distractions that whittle away just piece by piece at us, but really just taking that moment. And you just described an idyllic situation. Family outside, summer evening, grass, shade of the tree. It was implied. This is
because the pavement was still hot.
That's true. So in the middle of the day, but that kind of family life is that those are the treasures we really have to like consciously hold on to them and consciously make them happen. They don't happen as easily as they used to.
No, they don't. No, in fact, I just got invited to some kind of a gathering, family type gathering, you know, sister. Cousin type gathering, you know, that they send it out to everybody and half the people come and half of them don't, you know. And it was on a specific day, the one week when we have managed to get all of our kids together between getting back from college, finishing up, you know, sports practice at the high school and their job schedule that they could actually get a couple days off. And this gathering was right in the middle of that, you know. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, we've worked all year to get this, to find these 3 or 4 days together, and we won't be able to, we're going to be gone. But back when the kids, about, you know, it starts in high school, but about 8th grade and younger, it didn't matter if you have 20 kids, you can just say, Mom and Dad, we're going on vacation on X, and all pile into the van, you know, or the car or whatever it is. But now it's like, oh, you've got that. Oh, you've got that. Oh, yeah. And they all have their own lives, which is what you want.
Right. You're transitioning them towards that. But it is harder. And we have to, just what you did by staying aware, is that we have to do that because it's just so subtle.
Yeah.
And constant, especially when you have multiple activities that a kid can be in between a job and sports and obligations at church or to their community, volunteering and so on.
And the thing with summer jobs is the employers, they need those people, especially right now.
And
they really need them. And they don't earn vacation.
Mm-mm.
They don't earn sick leave. They don't earn, they're just hourly.
Right.
Hourly wage.
And when they're scheduled, they do need to be there. It's harder.
They need to be there.
Right.
And stringing 3 or 4 days together off is pretty hard.
With those many kids. That's right. Family time is really the priority. I mean, we call it the building block of society. And in a way, it's obvious. In a way, it's not. But then when you think of anything that goes on in society, major, minor, give it any label on either to either end of the pendulum that you will, it was either created or tolerated in a family, or something wasn't set up that would say, hey, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
You know, to some people just like, well, you know, I don't know about abortion, or I don't know about gun control, because they just didn't have the experience. Possibly one reason is they didn't have the experience to vet it,
right,
or just, you know, the direct and obvious things. But that as they always encounter, you know, our kids always encounter things that we didn't prepare them for, because society changes.
Right.
Our parents didn't have to think about the things that we have to. They certainly didn't tote us around 4 or 5 days a week on to a sports or traveling.
Yeah.
We had sports very much, but the traveling out of state, you know, $2,000 tournaments, things like that.
Generally in the lower grades and Little League and things like that, you know, youth soccer, it was all, you were playing games against teams in your hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Even in small towns, you know, there were enough teams for 4 Little League teams or something, or
mm-hmm.
6 soccer teams. But now it's, at least, especially with the better players, the elite, the travel ball,
mm-hmm.
they're traveling all over kingdom come.
Right, you know, right. And so when you find an opportunity like you did with your kids and they're all off at the same time, that is something not to be negotiated away or even pinched on one end.
One thing that made us extremely happy, we have 3 in college and then 1 still in high school, and the oldest of them, she lived at home her first 2 years of college because she was going to college where we in the town we live, and it just suited her mm-hmm. better. But she's working 2 jobs, that got pretty good jobs, and is managing it with her studies, and finally thought, well, it was time to maybe get an apartment,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she found an apartment and found a roommate, somebody that was taking some of the same classes she was, and the 2 of them are just, they're so compatible, it's great,
mm-hmm.
and the similar majors and everything, and so she's living about probably 1.5 miles from our house,
mm-hmm.
but she's about 3 blocks from where she works, and about 3 blocks from the campus, so
mm-hmm.
it's just ideal. It's just perfect. She
mm-hmm.
works some of the early, she's working at a coffee place, and you know, every other business in our town is coffee.
Right.
And sometimes she'll work the early shift and get there at 6 and get mm-hmm. off at 10 or 11 and go to class. And
oh, I remember those days.
Yeah,
college
and,
life.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, summer starts, and her roommate goes back home. Her roommate lives in San Luis Obispo, so she goes back home to be with her parents
mm-hmm.
For the summer. And our daughter calls up one day and she says, I'm coming home for the summer. Just like that. And it was like, she says, I miss my family.
Oh.
And it was so wonderful.
It is.
Because one of her sisters is at Santa Cruz, and,
mm-hmm.
and she's home for the summer. You
right.
know? And it was just like, I think the notion of her younger sister, who spent the whole year in Santa Cruz, is now home for the summer. It
right.
just, there was that tug of home.
Right.
And we were overjoyed.
Yes, yes. You know? And I would offer that she...
We hadn't turned her bedroom into a man cave or anything.
That's the part that's really a miracle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right. But I would offer that how you raised her strongly influenced her without speaking a word.
Without
because
speaking,
you
yeah.
modeled for her how important family is to you, so it is to her.
Yeah.
And that's the unspoken little secret, if you will, of family life that the secular world is pulling away at and is diluting,
right.
and it's just distracting. You moms, you need to go off and do all these things. Dads, you don't need to just have a job. You need to be moving up the corporate ladder. Bigger is
right.
better. In fact, I was in a social group of about 10, 12 people at church who were doing a book study, and they were talking about exactly that, is how the definition of success and the pressures on the family have changed in the last 40, 50 years, and that you have to be always moving up for the bigger house,
yeah.
the other cars. My parents bought a car and drove it till it just did the Disney cartoon thing and the doors fell off, the tires fell off, and it sat in the street till they towed it away. They drove a car for 20 years, and this is what you did. And you stayed in the house. You didn't keep moving up the corporate ladder. How? No, you would
no,
never.
No, really, it's really true. When we moved to the same small town where I live now, when I was 5 years old, Dad was going back to college at age 40, and Mom was an RN and was working nights. And 5 little kids from newborn to 7 years old, 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they moved into a 3-1 rental starter home, you know.
Right.
I don't know where the starter is on the home, but they call them starter homes, you know. And, and you know, you shared a bedroom with a sibling, a 9x9 or a 10x10
right.
bedroom. They were all, the houses all looked alike and all that. And you know, Dad was in school, because he'd been in the war, hadn't finished college, and at age 40 decided he wanted to go back to college. And Mom's working, and it was a small town, you know, and one of those, the whole village is watching out for you and all that stuff. It was very idyllic in a lot of ways. But as we got older, you know, and Dad finished college, got a job, and now they had two incomes and people going off to college, moving out. And pretty soon they weren't wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, but they now could move up. But nobody in the neighborhood moved up. It wasn't part of the vocabulary then. It was like, now there's only two of us in this 3-bedroom house. We certainly don't need anything bigger than that.
Right. Why would you?
Why would you?
Just like restaurants. I remember my mother saying, why would you go to a restaurant when you have food in your refrigerator?
And at that point, that house had home stamped on it. It just did. It was home. The neighborhood was home. The grocery store was home. All those things it's odd. It's just odd how that sort of thing has changed. You're right. It's all about, okay, we'll live in this house for 5 years and then it'll appreciate and boom, and we can flip it and we can
put the equity into something else.
But you know, we can pretty soon it's kind of like a Monopoly game.
It is. It is. And it happens piece by piece and step by step. And then you find yourself some incremental amount of time later saying, wait, my life at my age is very different than my parents. My parents were winding down at this age. The house was almost paid off. I'm still facing 15 years of a substantial mortgage, for example. And so we need those things that have us pull back and say, wait, reevaluate, really look at something. Because it's been such a gradual process. And the family I would offer has been where the compensating piece has been taken, you know, that the one or both parents are traveling. It's gone from jobs to support the family to professions, which is a very different picture. And if neither parent can compensate for what the family needs, then you've got a much more strained situation. And so then it's just progressed. And so the family time, the time with the family, and family dinner, I think I would offer, has taken the biggest hit because they both come home. Parents are both working. We just have to get the kids fed and then keep going through the evening
list. That's when everything gets scheduled, whether, you know, and unfortunately, even our parishes, most if you're in a ministry in the parish, when are you likely to get everybody together, whether you're having weekly meetings or there's no end of times where I'll have a guest on that's running a workshop on bereavement or something. And we meet every Wednesday at 7:30 or it's just the way of the world, you know, because if you meet every Wednesday at 1 p.m, you're not going to have anybody there.
Right, and how to do it. I remember years and years ago, the Mormon Church came out with Family Home Evening. Do you remember that on Wednesday nights?
Right.
Because they had so many church obligations, family dinner had suffered. And now looking back at it on hindsight, it was good that they put that stake in the ground for the family for Wednesday nights. But why not flip it completely? Family night that the family is split apart is only Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And when we look at it through, if you go back to our grandmothers and they say, why on earth would you do? I remember the one kid that had to go in and have a piano lesson half an hour, one afternoon a week. And all the other kids in the neighborhood are like, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry for you. That's such, you know. But relatively, how did it happen? That's a really good question. And I think we have to really just pull back and reevaluate.
I mean, there are always people who've wanted to be rich or have more. And I mean, I think it's one of the human traits, you know. But when is enough enough? And you see it really at the very rich. You know, the richest people in the world they're buying this and they're buying that.
Yes.
So, well, that's how they got to be that way. Well, you go, but if you got $6 billion, how much more do you need?
That's really true.
And it's almost, I think with them too, it's like a Monopoly game. It's a hobby as much as it is. I mean, some of these wheeler dealers are, and I don't say that necessarily negatively. I know they employ a lot of people and stuff. They're in their 80s.
Right.
And they're still dabbling in this and dabbling in that, and it's just interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I can afford the pizza and pay the light bill, I'm a happy camper.
Right, right. And so, you know, the longer I live, when you look back on the perspective of having raised a family and then now your friends are having grandchildren and so on and seeing the evolution of life, some friends of ours moved out of state and were able to buy an 8,000 square foot house. So of the two college girls, each of them had 2,000 square feet to themselves in this house in a very nice area. And I've thought to myself, I couldn't figure out a way to broach it well, but I thought, what could the Lord let you ask you to do with that? What other family could you, if you had dropped down to 1,000 square feet per person and gone to a 4,000 square foot house, who else could you have helped? Yeah. Because things, what could you, how could you have leveraged that money to changing someone's life? And it's totally outside the picture. But we have to kind of wonder, when we're given that kind of wealth, which would translate into opportunity to someone else or for someone else, how do we know if God's calling us to that? Yes, they've earned it. It's their right. I'm not saying it's not. But I do wonder when, you know, we've seen the picture of all the cars, you know, the lined up. And I remember being in that phase. Yes, we had double income, no kids. We're called dinks. I remember that. And with more money, you could just throw it up in the air kind of thing. But leveraging it wasn't something that anyone talked about. They talked about saving, so on and so forth, moving up in the houses, equity and all of that. But nobody said, can you take the extra money? What do you really need to pay the light bill and pay the pizza guy? And then who else can you pay their light bill for?
Yeah, it's really funny because, I mean, I can go through the old neighborhood and everybody, because just about everybody moves. It was a brand, one of the first tracts in the town, built in the early 50s, you know, and everybody on the street, they lived there till they died.
Wow.
Some were full professors at the university. Some were auto mechanics. Some were, you know, farmers.
The wealth of the continuity that they had in friendships.
Yeah.
And the tapestry of their life.
Like, why would we move away from this charming little street?
Right.
We planted that tree when Billy was born. And that tree when Sally was born. And
that's part of where the family tapestry, if you will, has been distracted. That's the wealth. I know so many people, the retirement age, are moving out of state. And it's like, wait, no, this is your wealth. This is the wealth of your community and your church and on the street and that you planted the tree. You go out of state, who's going to knock on your door? Nobody, they don't have any connection to you.
Yeah.
But that is the real wealth. And so looking at scripture, Matthew 10:30, even all the hairs of your head are counted. God loves us so much and has given us that. And I would offer that it's a very tall order to differentiate how much do we need and how much do we want.
So I think when God made me, he was tired of counting hairs on the head.
You think so?
He was tired of it. He's okay. we're not gonna do that. I know it's in scripture, but we're not doing that one anymore.
yes. I agree.
Although I did have a lot of hair when I was born, but not with the day I was
born. A lot of little baby boys do. Mine did too. And my daughter was bald as a cue ball for a couple years.
Yeah.
And yes, that's true. God's sense of humor. But the work of God's heart and hands is to support families and to support their redirection. And social media, I see it happening with a lot of moms, is that we know we only put out the best pictures. And, you know, my little one is doing this perfectly, or not so little one, high school, college, going here. And it's a mixed picture, and we don't give each other that mixed picture. And so we have to make space for that. Everybody's got to figure out what works and do what, but it's not just you do you, which I'm hearing more and more of that from young people, college, you know, late 20s, early 30s. And that's a complete debasement of God. It's not you do you, unless it's you do you as the Holy Spirit guides you. And so for families to go back and realize that their work is anointed by God, then there's a strength, there's a clarity. And then they're not looking to the outside of what other people think I should do, because we know social media has influenced that, is likes or not, and if people like what you're doing, and that really influences you, and so on. And just seeing the changes that are going on and the choices people are making is like, whoa, wait, support the family. And we have to keep coming back, and scripture is perfect. It sustains us, it guides us. And God will find any way to get to us. We all know the trick, so to speak, is you just flip it open and there'll be something relevant in the Bible. And
there aren't any bad words in the Bible. I mean, it's like no matter where you turn, you know, I used to say to my kids, you know, that just find if you're short on time, find anything Jesus said.
Uh-huh.
And see if you can find any fault with it. That's why Jesus is so popular even among non-Christians. Jesus is a very popular guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just his life was truly fault, whether you're a conservative or a liberal or the things he does and the lessons he teaches are ageless, number one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's talking to people 2,000 years ago, and there's not a single thing that he's saying that people could say, well, that was a different time, see. The reason he said that was because of this.
It was relevant then.
No, it's still relevant today.
True.
The five words, the big five, love your neighbor as yourself, you know, works today. And virtually every problem in the world would go away if that was true. You'd probably still have earthquakes and people getting struck dead by lightning occasionally, but you're love your neighbor as yourself.
How did you translate that for your children, can I ask you? How did you help your children translate that into real? How did you model that, I guess? Because I would think you modeled it rather than just lecturing on it, so
to speak. There's nothing to lecture, really. You know, it's like, let's find something that Jesus said and let's talk about it, you know. And let's be real critical. Let's say, why did Jesus say that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Why did he do the loaves and fishes? Why did he do the wedding feast at Cana? You know, why, you know, did the nets get full of fish?
Uh-huh.
All, you know, why the prodigal son,
mm-hmm.
all these things, the why, but find some fault with it. Find in this lesson something that, no, Jesus was being selfish there, or Jesus mm-hmm. was being, he was in a bad mood, or you can't find it.
Mm-mm.
It's not there, and it's 2,000 years old. You know, find anybody else that was writing, you know, Aristotle had some good stuff, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, there were a lot of philosophers had good stuff, you know, the Aquinas and all these people had good stuff, but stuff that's just completely timeless and is as relevant today as it was at the time it was spoken.
And I would offer that Jesus' stuff you can actually run the world with.
Oh, you
thoroughly.
Could. And that's why I say, you know, people, even non-Christians, they may, you're Catholic or you're Lutheran or you're Jewish or you're Mormon or we don't like this part of your religion or whatever it is they don't like. And people mm-hmm. can get pretty huffy about it.
Right.
But I almost never hear them say that about Jesus.
Interesting
Jesus's
point.
Teachings, almost never.
Interesting. And so talking about how we model that for our children, to love your neighbor as yourself. Man, that fits on a bumper sticker. That's beautiful. That's another thing, that when family life has been overtaxed and overscheduled and doesn't allow that time you were describing in the beginning of being outside on the grass with your little ones, you have to have that opportunity in order to see your neighbor. And to see your neighbor, truly see, not just wave and hello, but to understand and to connect with them and to see what they may need.
Yeah, and I think the biggest test or the easiest test is to attempt to put yourself in their shoes and say, what would I want if I were in their shoes?
Mm-hmm.
What would I want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had. Somebody that actually the Catholic Herald had written about, and she was talking about bereavement and,
mm-hmm.
and the ministry she had started in Fairfield, and it was, you know, and I was relating stories about when my dad died and you know what people would say or think mm-hmm. or do for the family, that kind of stuff, you know, and people are going to make mistakes. They're going to say something,
mm-hmm.
which is why sometimes when people die, I don't know what to say. I don't think I'm going to go to the funeral or the right. reception afterwards, because I'm afraid I'm going to say the wrong thing. I don't know what to say, especially when you're a kid or maybe you're a young yeah. adult, you know, and an uncle or something has died and you don't know what to say to your aunt and mm-hmm. you just kind of wish you could just go
right.
stay home, you know, and that things like that, like we had a neighbor across the street, just a husband and wife, both about 40 years old, no kids. He got colon cancer and died.
Mm.
Just, you know, just a peak of life, you know.
Oh, my.
Strong, athletic guy, very smart, had a great job. And both of them, you know, she's a professor. And they just had the world by the tail, you know.
Wow.
And he just got very sick, and there was just nothing they could do for him, you know. And so she's living across the street alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to, okay, you put yourself, okay, what would you want in that situation? You know, mm-hmm. what can you do? You know, and you do your best,
mm-hmm.
but you make mistakes, mm-hmm. or maybe you overread a situation. Mm. Maybe what you would need in that situation isn't what the person who's actually in that situation needs.
True.
Because they've a different life experience, complete mm-hmm. different life experience.
And it can change.
And it can change.
In the course of a day. But they always welcome the attention, the effort.
Seems like it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And they don't remember a lot because of the blur, the grief.
And a lot of what people carry into something like that, if they're naturally shy or very social or very unsocial, it stays with them, you know. And mm-hmm. you can knock on the door and try to, you want to come over for dinner? Well, mm-hmm. it's not my cup of tea.
No, I think we can only do what we can do. At 4th of July, a little dog came walking up to me on the sidewalk. Never seen it before. So I scooped it up, and I was going door to door, and it wasn't anyone's dog. And the dog was very frightened, you know, with the fireworks and so on. And it was just across the street and several houses
fireworks.
Down.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, yeah. And that's what had happened. And these people, they had a house full of kids and a house full of dogs, and they said, just leave it here while you go door to door. We'll do what we can. We'll keep it as long as we need to, because my dogs would not tolerate a new dog coming in. And then in talking to them in the course of the night, they had just lost, the father had just lost his sister that day suddenly. And they were just in that daze. They said, it's actually a distraction for us. What to do?
Yeah.
Somehow God had moved to them through me by bringing this dog so they could take care of it. And they really were grateful for it because it gave the kids a distraction mm-hmm. because the house was full of grieving adults. So I ran to the grocery store and grabbed several flavors of ice cream and a frozen lasagna so you can feed the adults and the kids are happy. Mm-hmm. So it's just something like what I thought, because when I went through it a year ago or so, that's what people did. And you can't eat, but when you do, you need to reach for something. And you remember the gesture.
Yeah.
You remember that piece of it. And it's that situation that I would offer that the busyness has crept into of noticing and having the opportunity to have more than a two-second conversation, to find out what's going on with your neighbor, and then to do something about it, and to be able to help or not help, or just to stand there in the moment and say, what do you need? And to be able to listen between the lines. And that's one of the things I've realized, that family life offers the community. Because mm-hmm. when family is there, it's there in the neighborhood, that's the connectivity. It's not just separate square buildings that people move right. in and out of. I remember in the 80s when garage door openers came up, and just noticing how the neighborhoods were shifted in the 80s due to that, is that no more talking with your neighbor at the property line. You know, it was in, out, and that was something that I think really diminished the neighborhood interactions.
That's a very interesting observation. I have noticed that it's different. When I go through the various stages of life that I've experienced, and from being a kid in a neighborhood to being a young adult in a neighborhood to having my own kids in a neighborhood, that kids aren't out. I mean, everybody talks about stickball. Very few people ever played stickball. I never uh-huh. actually played stickball, but we used to toss a tennis ball around with our baseball gloves in the street. We'd play hide and seek a lot. And just get in it by dark, you know, mm-hmm. whether it was summer or winter. People had a relatively big backyard. We might play
mm-hmm.
tackle football in a backyard, that kind of stuff. But I don't see that as much. most sporting activity with kids is organized now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just organized. You don't see too many parents out playing catch with their kid in the front yard or the backyard, or mm-hmm. unless pitching that night in the Little League, you know, and then uh-huh. just warming up or something. But
right.
And I sometimes wonder if we've sort of overdone the, you know, I need to have a uniform, I need to be on a team, we need to have a team name, we need yeah. to have a manager. And I know they, most leagues do their very best to help kids that don't have the money, but those mm-hmm. those things have become expensive too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't play Little League for free.
No.
You don't even play high school sports for free.
Do you think it'll come back? Do you think the cycle will return to how it was before?
I don't know. You know, it's hard to say.
I see you as a potential coach in the neighborhood, just gathering the kids together. No, really, it's something that impromptu sometimes that can help.
Yeah.
You know, I read on Nextdoor where a family puts, they've got a hoop out front, and they, you know, it's for their kids, but they put, the basketballs are out there all the time.
Yeah,
so the neighborhood,
you know, basketball
kids
hoops are still, that's the one thing you see mm-hmm. is we have a basketball hoop. And there was one street in our town where I in about one block, I counted like six basketball hoops. And
uh-huh.
I'm going, there better be an NBA star come off of this street.
Yeah.
You know? But that seems to be the one thing where you'll see even young adults on the playground playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a three-on-three game or something like that. You
mm-hmm.
know, but most of the other sports have gotten into the league or team, or
they have, and we've left a lot of kids behind. I would offer working with as a private math tutor over 25 years, we're leaving a lot of kids off the field, off the court, because they can't compete at that level, or their parents can't afford it.
I've often felt that you know, I mean, high school is such a turning point for so many kids and mm-hmm. going a lot of directions that if you took all the extracurriculars at a high school, whether it's student government, choir, band, you know, all these, you know, school plays,
mm-hmm.
all the athletic teams for at high school, they still call them boys and girls, you know, and just got every teacher together, every administrator together, the school board, et cetera, and said, okay, and maybe you don't specifically identify the kids at risk, but everybody knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, okay, football coach, you have a roster of 40 or something.
Mm-hmm.
You could take four more kids. You could take four more kids. School play, come on, you could take a couple more kids.
Why don't they? I'm sure you've offered this idea.
Everything's auditioned, right, including sports. People,
but after that initial period, let the kids go where they will, where their interests are. But why are the administrators not doing that to picking up the slack?
You know, it's like part of it is, I think, lots of coaches are resistant because their goal is to win. Ultimately,
yeah,
I mean, we
pressure's
have a darn
on them.
Scoreboard up there.
But you never know the jewel of a player that's just never done it.
Well, you don't know that. But also, I mean, I'm thinking, I mean, and you hear the excuse, well, they can do intramurals. They can do this. You know, like I said, there's no putting on that uniform
mm-hmm.
and running out on the field on a Friday night or the mm-hmm. basketball court or the tennis court and being part of something. Why are gangs so attractive? Because you belong.
Right.
You know, and now you belong.
They're a community.
You're in the school band.
And you have
Friday
a place
night,
and you have a job.
The football game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the girls' basketball team. And, yeah, maybe you're only playing 2 minutes a game, but by golly, you're on the team. You're wearing the uniform. You're going to practice every day.
Yes, you're part of the community.
You're part of that, or you're in student government, or you're the school play, or the choir. I mean, I can look at all these great high schools that people have, and they have all these great choirs. And they're all audition choirs.
Mm.
They're just, you know, they're because you've got to have a good voice, you know.
Right. Because of the competition
you're
has come in.
Screw it up otherwise. You
right.
know, we let kids in with bad voices, for heaven's sakes. You know, well,
right.
if you change your mindset a little bit and go, mm-hmm. we're trying to help these kids. And one of the things that they would really help them at the high school level is to belong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, belong. I mean, I can remember as a sophomore in high school, and I was undersized, and was decent in team sports like baseball and things like that, but I couldn't run very fast. I couldn't climb the rope, you know, that they do all this physical fitness stuff. And so we had a section on wrestling. And the nice thing about wrestling is you're wrestling people your own weight. It's all divided up by weight.
Right.
And so, you know, we're wrestling in PE, and I got up against a kid that was, you know, he was, basically all I had to do was sit on him. And, you know, and a wrestling coach came up to me and said, I think you'd be good on the wrestling team.
Oh.
Which I wasn't, ultimately. Right. But I went home, I said, Dad, guess what? The coach wants me on the wrestling team. You know, and it was like, wow, something I never had considered.
Wow.
Something that, you know, and I think that about some kid in PE and the football coach comes up and says, you know, we could use you on a football team. You've got good moves, or you got good speed.
Actually, that happened to me in junior college. The PE teacher came out to me and said, you swim, come try out for the team.
Yeah.
Right.
And all of a sudden, this kid is going home saying, I'm going to be on a football team.
Right.
And he is going to be on a football team. Whether he's good, bad, or indifferent, he's going to be on the football team.
Right.
Or he's going to be in the school play.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things are demanding, but so much of it is they belong.
Yes. And isn't that one of the common factors that we're seeing in the very difficult subject, the mass shootings in the schools and so on, is that those kids were typically detached.
It's almost, I mean, ever since the first time I've ever heard of these things. And you know, they're much more common now.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we have 24-hour news cycles with 16 different outlets. And so we're going to hear about a shooting in L.A. at a 7-Eleven, which happened yesterday, you know, that we maybe wouldn't have heard about because it's so in the news. But, I mean, I can remember the guy who got up in the tower at the University of Texas. That was 50, 60 years ago, you know. But it's almost a stereotype as to who you can just – in fact, I saw when they had, I think, in Chicago in Highland Park on 4th of July when they hadn't caught the guy yet. And they had, like, a former FBI agent on, and he said, well, there's a checklist. And he went right through it. He's going to he's going to be this. He's going to be this. He's going to be this. We're going to check his social media, and we're going to see this.
Wow.
And as it turns out, it's just check, 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 check.
I mean, it was
the person they arrested who has confessed, so we can talk about it as if he's guilty. He hasn't gone to trial, but he has confessed.
Right.
It fits that to a T. Almost a twin of the shooting in Uvalde, or Sandy Hook.
Yeah, keep going back.
And it's usually it's a certain age.
Right.
It's almost exclusively male.
Right.
But way beyond that is detached, loner. You know, you rarely do you hear people say, oh, we were completely clueless. This kid was, you know, All-American quarterback and 4-point and great family. You almost don't. Not to say that that can't happen there. But, and you wonder if there had been opportunities.
It doesn't seem much of a stretch to be, now that enough data is being gathered where you have a common set of attributes with the suggestion that you're making for the schools. And we have a plethora of small schools in the state. And after the kids, so even for a large high school, 3,000-4,000 students, after the kids go towards their natural interests, the kids that are left, it's not hard for the teachers to get together, the guidance counselors, and say, okay, who doesn't have a spot here that's pulled in? Yeah, have the choir try it, and if it doesn't work, let the football coach try it.
Yeah.
And because you never know what's hiding.
In most high schools, you have enormous numbers of opportunities. You know, most bands are quite big. I know the high school that my kids went to had about 4 different choirs. Some of them
some very competitive, but
they were all audition choirs.
So when does the community step up? And when does the community step forward to say, we want to change this?
Yeah, the other thing you do is is you limit. You say, if you're saying, well, we just don't have enough sport, I'm sorry, you, the kid who's the starting quarterback is probably also the best player on the basketball team and the baseball team.
Good point.
Almost without exception.
Right.
Truly, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, you only get to play two sports, or you only get to play one sport.
Right.
To make room, because, yeah, I mean, you can see it at so many high schools. It just transfers. The stars of the football team are now playing
right.
and they set the seasons like that. You know, basketball doesn't start till football's over. Baseball
right.
doesn't start.
And we actually know the human body doesn't. Their knees need a break. Their
yeah.
ankles need a break. It's really not good for them long term.
It's only the elite of the elite now that concentrate on one sport, because they're going to go to the pros, or they're going to go mm-hmm. to the Olympics, or and so that they've sort of self-selected to be playing just one sport.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, you'll see that, especially in the smaller high schools, where it's the same kid. He's the
starting
pitcher, starting quarterback, student body president, you know.
Right.
And you're like, this is great. But what about
the kid right behind him?
Who could have been the starting quarterback.
And was it true to offer that the second, so to speak, the one right behind them is not in all three sports, two or three sports as well. So if you say you pick which one you're going to go for, then that opens up basketball for that second,
or
the kid that's second
best. Or not just the second, it opens up a spot on the team.
That's what I'm trying to say.
For
yes.
number 20.
Oh, know? Yes, for another kid.
Like, yeah, so the kids at the and they're not necessarily at the bottom of the skill level.
Mm-hmm.
I know some coaches would be enthusiastic about that, and others would be very resistant. I've known a lot of coaches in my life as a sports writer, and I could almost
there's
tell
a
you
lot
which,
of pressure.
Which ones would say, that's great, and others that would say, it won't work,
mm-hmm.
and others, and maybe it won't, and others that would say, no, you know, I mean, are you gonna accept the fact that we might not win a game? Are you going to accept...
Okay, let me ask you this. Instead of going to their extreme and their idea, which I get it, because there's so many factors in their life that have to change, that pressure them, that they have to win, could they look at the...
Well,
the,
that's, you know, most of it's self-imposed pressure.
Mm.
I was an athlete,
mm-hmm.
and nobody wanted to win more than I did. It wasn't the coach pressuring me to win. It wasn't mom and dad pressuring me to win.
Right.
I wanted to win.
Okay.
I wanted that scoreboard to have more on my side than the other side.
Right.
You know, and coaches are that way. They're human beings. Everybody,
right.
Most everybody wants to win. Very few people are playing organized sports for the exercise.
Right. So I would offer that things like this, when you've got so many moving parts, that the solution, if you will, is actually more simple than remaking the entire system. It's maybe 10, 15% of your student body that doesn't have a place.
Yeah.
Identify as close as you can, or ask the student.
That's all I'm suggesting.
Right.
Yeah.
And then after that, football coach, give him a try. See if he can catch a ball. You never know what's hiding under that hoodie.
Well, you may find the hidden gem, number one.
Yes.
But number two is, and it probably won't affect your wins and losses. You've still got the same kids on the team,
mm-hmm.
and now you've added four kids to the roster. So you've got to buy four more uniforms, four
right.
more bottles of water,
uh-huh.
A little bit more hot water, and people taking showers after the game, and
right.
and that kind of stuff. But now you got four guys. Maybe they play a little bit. Maybe they actually are good enough to start, but they're part of this deal. You've still got the star quarterback
right.
throwing the touchdown passes.
Right.
You know, so you probably isn't going to affect your – you're not – at the high school level, you're not going to say you have to – like Little League, you have to play each kid a certain number of innings
mm-hmm.
and all, which is good.
Right.
But at that level, you're not going to make any requirements on the coach as to how often the kid gets in a game, how
mm-hmm.
often – you just say – just take four kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
have you talked to coaches?
School play.
Have you talked to the coaches or the
I've talked over the years. I've written columns about it.
Has there been any response?
I haven't seen anybody attempt it. You know, because it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think minimally, if they opened their eyes a little bit and said, "Okay, I'll take two." and I'll look around. Let me see who I think has got potential. Let me look. That's where I got picked up for the swimming team.
Doesn't have to be potential, though.
But, I mean, when you see him in PE class, hey, that kid can run and catch a ball. Let me see. Let me start.
Well, they were wrong about me being able to wrestle, but,
that's true. But it was the catalyst that got you.
I was thrilled. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was thrilled. It really helped my self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, what I'm talking about through God's Heart and Hands Ministry is talking about families. We're talking about the school family. We're talking about the community family. And we know that when someone feels part of the family, they don't go off the rails.
Yeah,
and if they do start to, and we all know, we teenagers, there's like a switch flips in them and they start treading towards the edge. If you've got family that's connected to them that sees it, they just herd them back in. They, you know, they're going after that 100 sheep. Yeah. They bring them back like the Lord does. And now that we identified this, now the onus is on us, I would offer. And while those high schools that are got kids that would go towards the pros, there's more high schools below that level than there are at that level. The bulk of them are below that with size. And then the middle schools are the same thing. And typically that's parents. When my son was playing in middle school, the coach just – he depended on him because he had developed early in another student. Just depended on them. And I kept telling him, you better develop your bench. Something's telling me you better develop – you can't hang off these two players because they were good. They were a good team, but they didn't develop their bench. One got a sprained ankle, and I forget what – he fell down and broke his wrist within a week. There were his star players gone. Yeah. And so nothing below it. But this was middle school, same thing, like wanting to win. But where's that community? The others on the bench and so on and so forth and going deeper. And that's when we have to take responsibility, just like a family stepping up and saying, hey, we're going to reorient. We're going to put God back in the center. It happened. We're going to put him into every decision, pray about every decision, and look at the word and what is he guiding us. I mean, you can search on any word and find references to it or indirect references to it for the Bible. And so I would offer that the family of the high school, the community can now start stepping up and offering this idea, hey, coach, you've got a full roster, but for you to take on a couple more, I'll come in and volunteer and take care of the details that go along with that. Or I'll volunteer and help you try to pick out some students. I'll contribute to the picture.
Yeah.
Because they've all got full-time jobs and so on and so forth. But at what point do we have to start taking responsibility rather than what's coming out of these shootings is legislation. No, we need to go after the heart. We need to look at what's going on with these young men. Like we know, and we've got enough data. And that's the one thing about you said, hearing about a shooting in LA. We know so much. Our communication is so tight and is so immediate. But we also know a whole lot more than we ever did. And we know there's contributing factors. So now we can connect with each other, easier with parents and coaches, to say, hey, who else can we pick in? Who pull in to the sport? A lot of kids go into drama, like you were saying, with being the tech crew and back and developing skills they never would have. Or being the parents that volunteer at the high school. Hey, I get off early on such and such a day. I can come help build sets. I know how to work the tools. I will be there to show the high schoolers how to work the tools. When our son went through Boy Scouts, it was, not even Cub Scouts. He'd move through it. And all the other boys, he was the only boy in his pack that knew how to use a saw and a hammer. The rest of them, dads had already done it. Mm-hmm. And so we completely changed, because my husband was the head of it, have his little pack or whatever they call it. He completely changed the goals of it to help them all learn how to use tools. Rather than all the big badges, it's like, wait, no, let's give them a badge and take the time for them all to do it. So it comes down, I would offer, to a parent. Like I was, when I was humorously saying, you could be the coach of the neighborhood getting the kids out there. It's a parent seeing it and stepping up. And I would say when there's so many moving parts and there's so many big things going on and things are shifting so much, it's what can I do in my space? Where will the Lord use me? And is it just that, us opening up, saying, Lord, I see the problem. How can you use me? What can I do? Who will cross my path, like the dog that walked up to me on the sidewalk of 4th of July, that I met a neighbor, so on and so forth. That I think when we have that movement in our heart, he's going to use us. He's 62 million short, as I find myself saying lately. So he needs all of us, and however it is, because it's going to fit completely in our lives. It's not going to be a complete upheaval in our own life or our own family. Kids, I'm not going to see you for 3 days because I'm going to go off and help the neighborhood kids. No, it's going to be, how is it integrated? Mm-hmm. How? Show me, Lord. Use me. And there's always scripture, as we know. And let's see. Romans 12:9. Let love be sincere, hate what is evil, hold on to what is good. Well, that's the litmus test for what we need to do, but how do we do it? We let the Lord guide us. We let the Holy Spirit reveal it to us, move through us. And I would offer that God never turns away from someone that says, Lord, I see this. What can I do?
Yeah, that's. I think that's the key to this whole discussion is, I think you've hit it right on the head, is you can, whether it's the neighbor across the street that's having difficulty, or the kid who's struggling, or whether it's in your own family or school or whatever, is, Lord, help me do the right thing here. Help me. I want to help with this situation, mm-hmm. but I don't really know what's the right thing to do here. Just help me do it. Help me do the right thing.
Right.
You know, that's frequently my prayer. Is like, I mean, there are times when you know what's the right thing to do, and you do it. Or maybe you're too lazy, or you make excuses and you don't do it.
Mm, or Moses, not me.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
But
right.
Or it's too hard.
Uh-huh.
But there are times when you face these situations with goodwill and everything else, and you really don't know what's the, you know, isn't what the right thing to do is. Like, it's a moral call.
Right.
I mean, the moral calls are usually pretty clear cut.
Mm-hmm.
They just are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, you're not supposed to rob the bank. Okay.
Right.
You know, it's a pretty clear cut
mm-hmm.
deal in almost all cases. But the, it's like, how can I, with the homeless situation, how can I truly help, whether it's this person or the whole problem or, mm-hmm. or what it is, how can I truly help? What, you know, because we have some of these problems in society too.
Mm-hmm.
That are, I mean, I had, in my own family, my brother, who is deceased now, he had a lot of struggles.
Mm.
And trying to help him was very difficult. You felt like you're beating your head against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, okay, let's do this. And you'd get, let's do this and let's do this and,
right.
and you need a job and so let's back
right.
in the days when the Sunday paper had all kinds of jobs,
right.
you know, and he was well educated, you know, and you'd go through the steps and you go through the steps, okay, this sound okay, yeah.
Right.
And then you get to, oh well, let's go to the car, get in the car, let's go knock on that door and let's
right.
And up would come these excuses to the point where you just realize the whole thing was a charade.
Right.
You know, that he had no intention all through all these steps of actually going through with it, you
wow.
know, and at some point you throw your hands up and you get mad and you know, and you say, okay, mm-hmm. you're on your own, you know,
right.
I tried.
Right,
you
don't know what to do.
We're not talking about a six-year-old, we're talking about adults.
Right.
You know, and you say, Lord, what do you want me to do here? I mean, you put me in the same family 13 months younger than my brother,
mm-hmm.
what do you want me to do?
Right.
I'll do it, but I don't know what you want me to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I won't do it. Maybe it'll be too hard. But you
I
know.
Don't know. Well, I don't think you'd ever back down from anything that's too hard, Bob. I really don't. But because you try to fight anything. I don't know. Because I know people that have to deal with that in their families.
And I know my mom. I mean, it till the day she died, that was her great heartache.
Yeah.
You know, was
in hindsight, what would you, because I know people that deal with that.
Sometimes she'd beat herself, not usually, but she'd beat
yeah.
herself up and say, what did I do wrong? You know, what did I do wrong?
Because we didn't know as much
yeah.
then as we know now.
But in a lot of cases, I think there was, you didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you have, you know, this person maybe was born that way or was, certain life experiences that you didn't have any control over or didn't think you were doing anything wrong.
Well, we also understand now that mental illness can show up and it's a brain chemistry that triggers. Typically, it's
yeah.
triggered by, if it is there, adolescence.
Yeah.
And there's a shift in the brain chemistry where then the process starts and then you'll see it. And then, interestingly, it calms down the early 40s.
Yeah.
If it's a really extreme.
If they make it that far.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it does. Somehow, it just the brain just calms down. So then again, but it taxes a family to its limit.
To the max,
and,
yeah.
And in that situation, from what you're describing, is it all we can do is love? All we can do is accept? And that's one of that's the most helpless to, and when we can't do anything on our side, but he always just calls us to be faithful. And that, I think, is the hardest part, especially Matthew 10:30, that about even all the hairs on your head are counted. I'm caught by the fact that he gazes at us mm-hmm. the same way we gaze at our babies.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful thought.
Isn't it? That he just loves us that much. And Psalm 133, verse 1, how good and how pleasant it is when brothers dwell together as one. Is just the family coming together is good, regardless of what it looks like. And so for God's Heart and Hands ministry is we can't see the fruits. What is it? Action without attachment to the fruit of the action. That's all the Lord's calling us to do is love, right? Yep. Number one is love, and then love your neighbor as yourself.
Five words.
Yes.
Jane, thanks so much.
Thank you. It was good being here.
God's Heart and Hands ministry. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Empty hands held high, such small sacrifice. If not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the word